Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Time for Corlin and McKinney Politics. Got a good show for you this week. In the first segment, we're going to talk about the debate, which I did not watch. I have no interest in the debates this year. I know who the candidate's going to be, and if it's not the candidate who I hope it is, I probably will not vote. Secondly, we're going to talk about, or Jimmy, I should say, is going to talk about the impeachment proceedings that started on Thursday. Then we're going to talk about the border situation, which is just getting worse and worse and worse for those of us who really want to have secure borders, which we do not have. And then we're going to sum up and talk about Biden and give you our opinions on what's going to happen in 2024. Jimmy, you want to start out talking about the debate?
Yeah, so another useless kabuki theater on Wednesday night with the Fox Business News hosted debate for the Republican candidates for president. I should say the Republican candidates for runner-up for president. You had seven people on stage trying to break out and show that they're going to make some ground against Donald Trump. Donald Trump has about, on average, probably around a 40% lead in the Republican primary. Basically, going to be very hard, in fact, almost impossible to catch him. Even if he goes to prison, even if the Democrats somehow try to throw the book at him and get him there, people are just not going to give up. In fact, that'll probably even raise his profile even higher, and you'll see a pushback against it. But a lot of people did not watch it either, Al. They joined you. From the first debate, the first Republican debate a month ago, the numbers were down about 27%, so from about 12 million down to around 9 million people watching it.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, so not much excitement going on with it because, again, you're just seeing, you know, the people that are watching it are either maybe potentially looking for a vice presidential candidate, maybe looking for an alternative because they really don't like Trump. A lot of people are watching it just out of the theater and the interest to see what was going to happen. But I think most of the people that are watching it are really probably not going to really change their opinions or minds. And after watching the incredible, you know, and I didn't watch all of it from start to finish. I've watched different segments of it. But after watching kind of the visceral attacks upon each other and the lack of control by the Fox Business crew, well, actually Dana Perino, Stuart Varney, and then the Univision reporter, who is definitely a progressive liberal, makes no sense why they were trying to appease that segment of the population for a Republican debate. But it just got very ugly, disturbing, and I don't think anybody broke out in spite of some of the media's push that either Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis, you know, jumped up in front.
Jimmy, I got a question for you. I'm seeing what I think is a new guy throwing his hat into the ring. I forgot where he is from. I believe it's either Montana or North Dakota.
Bergstrom, North Dakota.
Yeah. What do you think about him, Jim? Why is he even there?
Well, okay. So he's putting his name in the ring probably because he's able to self-fund. He made a fortune in business. As governor of North Dakota, he's got a good reputation. And interestingly enough, he didn't get a lot of attention in the past, but this particular debate, there was a little more attention, and he did a fairly decent job to the point where he's one of the three debaters that Donald Trump actually called out as doing a decent job. So that actually puts him into a little bit higher ground with probably the vast majority of Republican voters, again, the ones that support America First and Trump retaking it. So Bergstrom, interesting character, high probability because of his business experience that he'll end up in a Trump administration if Trump gets reelected and makes it through the primaries into the election.
Well, I got a question for you, a bit of a personal question, Jimmy. Do you think you're going to end up in the Trump administration, given all the activity you have played in the last two elections?
Hey, I have no idea. I
hope you do, Jim.
I would love to participate in the security assistance and kind of, you know, do my best to cut back on the wasteful, stupid spending in the Department of Defense in order to make us more safe, make us more secure, and actually build better relationships rather than just throw money at problems. But I'm not pushing for anything at this point. I'm actually just trying to inform people as best I can. So,
well, you are doing the best you can, Jimmy. And the best, quite frankly, I believe is very effective. I don't think anybody is talking about Trump really on the airwaves as much as we are, and we do have a pretty good audience. So, you know, I hope we're doing some good is all I can say. I really find this particular election from the Republican side to be very, very, I would have to say, non-essential, I think, is the word. I think regardless of what people think about Trump, I think he is going to be definitely the candidate if he is able to representing the Republican Party. I mean, his lead is substantial within that party, Jim.
Yeah, so a lot of people have, you know, look, they're angry because they believe he was cheated in 2020. And they're angry with what's happening in America right now.
Right.
And those are, you know, there's more people that are jumping on board that train than have ever done in the past. Vivek Ramaswamy, as a South Asian and Indian, and a very successful businessman and a millennial, brings a whole new dynamic to the kind of, you know, button-up conservative Republican Party,
right.
And he's bringing people in. I think that's an important change. You're seeing Tim Scott bringing in kind of a logical and a nice, very effective conversation for the black community to question, especially here in South Carolina, to question what the Democrats have done for them in the past. And you're seeing Hispanics that are beginning to step up and say, hey, what the heck is going on? I don't support the crazy ideology pushes that the Democrats and the left are pushing. Now, a lot of that is controlled by the media. The media is attempting to hype people like Ron DeSantis. Liz Peek, for instance, wrote a piece in Fox News, immediately an opinion piece saying, oh, he won and all the rest of you should drop out.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. These people are all fighting for some level of power.
Right.
They're not going to gain any big ground on Trump right now. This didn't move the needle at all for most of them. And in spite of the money that's being thrown at those candidates, a lot of those big donors that are actually do not like Trump because they don't like America First. They don't like America First because they don't want to stop globalization. So there's big Republican conservative businesses out there that are pushing for agendas right now that are trying to undermine an America First agenda so they can actually continue with their entire movement to actually take more control and buy out the leadership in Washington, D.C.,
right.
Including people like Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy, Paul Ryan, the power players behind the scenes of the big Republican Party. And Americans, frankly, appear to be fed up with it.
Jimmy, we're going to take a break here. Not right now, but shortly, very shortly, about a minute and 20 seconds. I'm sure you've got a clock that you're actually looking at. Also, give me an opinion once more about the fellow from North Dakota.
Yeah, I think Doug Burgum's probably going to end up in an administration. I don't think he's certainly not going to win the nomination. He's not well known enough. And I don't think anybody else there. I don't think Haley's going to make it. And certainly DeSantis is not making any ground. So in spite of the push by the media, what's probably put in play now is the only thing that's going to stop Trump would be putting him in a prison. And I don't think that would stop him at all either.
Well, he is an interesting guy. There's no question about that. Got to take a real quick break right now for a commercial, you guys.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back to the Corlin McKinney Economics Report featuring Jim McKinney. First of all, I want to say my heart goes out to the Feinstein family. How about you, Jim?
Yeah, I feel sad for Dianne Feinstein. You know, she passed away. It was announced on Friday, the 29th. She actually, this is the sad part about it. This is what really bothers me. These people that are so old that stay in power for whatever reason, where they're still in Washington, they're still working up to where they're no longer mentally capable of doing things, but these staffers prop them up for the political power that they have. And people like Mitch McConnell, you know, he's not able to stand and speak at any, you know, without any problems anymore. Joe Biden, Dianne Feinstein. Why would you want to go to the end of your life without being around family or about be around people that love you? And anyway, to me, it's a very sad state that people are willing to hold on to power so long. It's not like they're going to take it with them. And unfortunately, that's what happened. And now they're going to scramble to get that seat back in the Senate because that makes it an equal number of seats between Republicans and Democrats in the Senate, and that would be a problem for the Democrats.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I think as a human being, she really stuck to her principles. But in my opinion, as you know and as the audience knows, many of her principles were things that I disagreed with. Jimmy, let's go on after giving what I think is a pretty good, I don't want to say eulogy because it was not a eulogy, but a pretty good, I want everybody to know that we are really sorry for the Feinstein family that Ms. Feinstein passed away recently. Jim, let's talk a little bit about the impeachment that happened yesterday.
Yeah, so like the debate, there's a lot of kabuki theater going on in Washington right now. And this impeachment inquiry that's been opened up by Jim Comer and, of course, Jim Jordan and the Republicans.
Right.
They laid out fairly significant indicators of fraud and corruption through factual documentation of bank records, of communications between Biden family members, and between communications with other groups. And of course, they've got witnesses and business partners that show that Joe Biden lied about his relationships with Hunter Biden's businesses. So they made the case very strongly. But here's the problem, Al. None of the mainstream media is reporting on it. So ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, you know, the whole Microsoft organization, you're not seeing anything online that talks about the specifics in the impeachment inquiry. Your very brief, you know, little sub comments about it. And what that means is that most Americans aren't going to see the facts behind it. And they're going to believe the manipulation and the lies that say, hey, there were no facts behind it.
Right.
Which is a sad, very sad state of the media and shows how corrupt they are in supporting Democratic policies and not doing their job as actually holding government accountable to the people.
Yeah, I think it's a real shame that our, I mean, as I mentioned at the bottom of the last daily editorial that I posted, it's a real shame when you really have to question how much trust you can put into your government. It really is a shame. I know that Jim Jordan did, I'm sure he did, a very good job. I will do what I can to post that. I know it'll be on YouTube, and I'll do what I can to post that on the site. Jordan is doing a hell of a job, a hell of a good job, but nobody is not going anywhere, which is, I would have to say, a result of the media coverage, Jimmy, which is pretty much non-existent. I have to really wonder, and I wonder this when I watched Jordan the last time on YouTube, what really is going to happen to the Republican Party, God forbid, if something should happen to him, and if something should happen to the current Speaker of the House. I think the party will really be in trouble. Jimmy, do you have an opinion on that?
Well, these changes happen over a long period of time. And what you're seeing is a rise in Americans that are fed up with the corruption inside D.C. They're fed up with the rise of power by very influential corporations, investment companies, BlackRock, Fidelity, State Street, that actually own the leadership in D.C. Americans are fed up with it. The question is of how much control will they have? Over time, these things erode. Donald Trump, Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell, Joe Biden, none of these issues, none of these individuals actually drive the outcomes that the people begin to feel. So there will be somebody that fills in for each one of these people, no matter what power position. So the Republican Party is moving away from an elitist country club party to a more populist, take care of the working class Americans and individual rights and freedoms. Right. That's not going to change.
No.
What will change is how much pressure the institutions, the deep state, and the corporations put to control those people that are trying to reach back and get their freedoms back, get their taxes back. That's the problem in America right now. This impeachment inquiry is only a starting point. It's not going to go anywhere if they don't actually get some media attention. That's the reality, because the Democrats have been very clear that they will lie straight up to people's faces and say that there is no factual evidence, that this is a lie, as they did with the Trump. Remember, the Trump impeachment in 2019 was wall-to-wall coverage, full-on coverage by all the networks all day long. They're not doing anything like that, even though the 2019 entire impeachment was a fabricated phone call, highlighted by, false narratives. And of course, with Ukraine, and then of course, at this point, we've got a lot of documentation.
We got to close, as you know, Jim, in close to a minute. But I have to say, I'm really glad that particular impeachment that you're discussing right now failed in spades.
Well, yeah, and of course, then you had the second impeachment effort after the January 6th events to try to very rapidly do that. And, it just shows the level of disdain that the institutional parties have for the American vote.
Right.
That's what's so disturbing and undermining. But let me just finish this up in the last 30 seconds here. The Republicans are attempting to undermine the leader of the party, Donald Trump, who's trying to represent the people and has the vast majority of the support. So the institutions of the Republican Party are trying to tube him, while the Democratic Party are trying to tube anybody that would protect, that would go after Joe Biden. So they're keeping everybody else out of the event. What a contradiction. What a sad state of affairs in America when you see it that way.
Big difference, Jimmy. Big difference. We had to take a top of the hour news break right now.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Corlin and McKinney Politics, featuring Jim McKinney, Lieutenant Colonel, retired Jim McKinney, probably my best friend in the world. Going to talk a little bit about my favorite subject when you're talking about the ineffectiveness of the Democratic Party. My favorite subject is the border, Every time I watch what's going on at the border on either, interestingly enough, CNN or Fox, it is just absolutely hideous what's happening down there. Jimmy, let's get your opinion.
Yeah, so, excuse me, Elon Musk went down and did a live stream yesterday, I should say Thursday, the 28th of September, in Eagle Pass in Texas. And he interviewed a couple local sheriffs, the Republican congressman from the area, and some border folks, some Border Patrol people. And then he walked over and saw a large group coming in. But what he was trying to highlight was how many problems there were, even in this little town of Eagle Pass, population of about 28,000, where according to the mayor and the congressman, they're getting about 11,000 illegal border crossers a day in this little town of 28,000. When they go through the entire border area and there are different areas down around, there that are getting in different groups, they're talking about literally hundreds of thousands of people in a month that come through. So when you look at the actual numbers from the CDC, the illegal border entrances from 2020, basically after the election, towards the end of the, when the Biden administration took over in 2021, from an average roughly a little under 500,000 a year to where we're now in 2023 at about 3 million a year, meaning up to date, we're at about 7 million illegal immigrants crossing. That's more illegal immigrants than the populations in 40 of our 50 states.
That's right. I think a lot of people don't realize that particular statement really puts the gravity of this particular problem front and center. People have to be aware of that.
You know, the Biden administration is certainly having a problem with managing the economy. There's no question we've had significant increases in crime because of the lax, the anti-police policies, because of actually some of these illegal immigration efforts. They're having a tremendous problem with foreign policy and their funding with the Ukrainian war, what they did in the pullout in Afghanistan, and basically an embarrassment in relationships with Iran, with Western Europe, and many places around the world. But the one thing that is actually having the biggest impact on the future of this nation is this massive influx, demographic change of illegal migrants coming across the border, and then the cost to move them, to house them, to provide them services, to integrate them into schools, to do all the things that the Democratic Party has promised in order to bring them in as new voters. But the reality is it's going to break the system, and it is breaking the system. Clearly in New York with Mayor Adams screaming about it, with the state of New York, Kathy Hochul, the governor, with the state of Massachusetts and the governor declaring a state of emergency, with Boston. And now we've got, busloads going into Chicago and all these areas that, quote, were sanctuary cities back in the Trump administration, because they tried to make a political statement, but they can't either afford it and their populations are getting fed up. So what we're seeing right now is the most damaging event to America that you have probably seen in our lifetimes, and certainly possibly within the entire, since the Civil War.
You're saying our entire history, Jimmy?
I'm saying at least since the Civil War, the violence of the Civil War. We're talking about, basically a massive influx. If you remember, prior to the 2016 and even the 2020 election, most of the leftist ideologues said, hey, there were about 11 to 15 million illegal immigrants. Many of them on the right and the Centers for Immigration, the people that did research, looked at about 20 to 21 million. Right. We're now approaching 30 million illegal immigrants, which is about 7 to 8% of the overall population of the United States. That is way too much to carry the load when there's really, and simultaneously, the people that legally want to enter are having a harder time with it, and the restrictions are so difficult, the length of time you wait for a green card and then eventual citizenship. But these people are fast-tracking, jumping ahead of the system and getting financial support from this government. And why? Because basically they think that's going to help them politically.
Yeah. Jim, let me ask you, in your opinion, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I think I want everybody to know that you're not necessarily just a one-way guy. In your lifetime, have you ever voted for a Democrat? And if so, why?
Well, so, I mean, that's an interesting question. I don't, back in, you know, I've served in the military since I was 19 years old.
Yeah.
And spent most of my time overseas. So national elections, when I was overseas, I was able to do remote voting.
Right.
On a few occasions when I was back for school or whatever, I was in my district or could do local elections. There were a couple of times when I was very young, I had a different view. You know, as they say, when you're young, if you're not a liberal, you don't have a heart. If you're older and you're a liberal, you don't have a brain. So I actually have always been conservative my entire life.
Yeah.
And I picked candidates that were focused on freedom, on individual choice, on policies that would actually keep America strong. So I won't say that I ever really voted for a Democrat, though I've had different views on life over time.
Yeah.
What I see now, though, with this border dilemma was what happened in California when I was young, basically a conservative state, massive influx of illegal immigrants into the U.S., ultimately, you know, given driver's license, ultimately given the opportunity, though not legally to vote, but they were on voter registration rolls. They were, there was more names to be able to put out there. And then the Democrats doing a very good job at orchestrating and organizing in these big urban areas, this left vote with the number of ballots that they could collect and harvest. That's changed the outcome. The overall dynamics, the immigration into California changed the dynamics.
Yeah.
I think that that's the template. I speculate that's a template the Democrats wanted, and it was successful there. And California, unfortunately, because of its population, kind of drives its economy and its population, drives the direction of the nation. There's a guy named Michael Nesbitt that wrote a book way back in the 80s that was actually kind of highlighted how you could, you know, capitalize on that, on those changes in California. The problem is it's going in the wrong direction. It's moving more towards Venezuela, more towards a socialist system, which is very destructive. And without that pushback, and unfortunately, the Republican Party has done nothing to push back in California. They gave it up, and people like Karl Rove gave it up for the way that they wanted to run election processes. And the reality is without a fight there, you're going to lose the nation. And that's what we're seeing with Gavin Newsom potentially moving into fill for Joe Biden if he doesn't make it to the election.
Yeah. Well, the only comment I can make is I think Joe Biden is a good example of a Democrat. There's no question on that. My problem with Joe Biden, and I think and the reason I have a problem is I think he is a frail human being, and you cannot be a mentally or physically frail human being in this day and age. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back and wrap up the program with some opinions, more opinions on President Biden. Stick around. Welcome back, Corlin McKinney, Economics, not Economics, Politics. Actually, we should be calling it McKinney Politics. I think in this particular week, he has probably given 90% of the important topics, and I really, really admire him for doing that. Jimmy does a lot of study, spends a lot of time on current events in politics. We're going to wrap up the show right now with our opinions of Joe Biden. I think you know what most of them are. I'm going to ask Jimmy to start out, and then I'll come in also.
Yeah, so Al, there's an interesting dilemma that's facing the Democratic Party right now. Nate Silver, he's the founder of 538. You know, it's a kind of a Democrat left, polling authority, tries to be neutral, whatever, but he's very much supports, progressive ideologies. But he actually has done an article and he lays it out that it's a problem right now for the Democrats that they're going to have a very difficult time getting out of. And here's the dilemma. So Joe Biden is diminishing in capacity. We've talked about you know, many, many times. It's fairly late to get a new candidate in, and the Democratic Party has been very careful to ensure that no other candidate, a Robert Kennedy Jr., for example, or a Marianne Williamson, or even a more mainstream Democratic candidate, they've not allowed anybody to step into the race. So as Joe Biden diminishes, there's really not an opportunity to get another player in to get them on the ballots. And a lot of this is technicalities within the voting system in order to get people registered to fund, to apply for candidacies in these states as you're moving towards the primary. That's not to say that the Democratic Party can't do it, but what it does say is that it's going to be very problematic for them to kind of fill a gap if Joe Biden can't make it. Another problem that the Democrats are facing with
I missed that one.
I said another problem that the Democrats are facing with Joe Biden is his backup right now, for some reason he doesn't make it, would be Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris as the vice president would fill the position if Joe Biden was either, you know, incapacitated, died in office, or basically removed because of an impeachment. She's less liked and actually probably reviled in many cases, in many circles, and has a very bad problem with management of her own vice presidential staff. You've seen that with the massive turnover in communications directors and chiefs of staff, and basically is not apparently a good person to work for, has been obviously shown in her positions in California, both as senator and prior to that as attorney general, as a corrupt individual who's willing to do whatever it takes, sleeping with Willie Brown, the former speaker in the California Assembly, a very powerful politician. She's willing to do anything to keep in power. And the people around her are going to protect her because they want to see a black woman get into the office. So there is an internal fight already between, another potential candidate to fill for Joe Biden. And the third biggest problem is, you know, as Nate Silver says, it's too late probably to replace him. The third problem is he's just not going to be able to stand up in a debate against Donald Trump or any other candidate. As we go forward, and they will keep him away from the debate, that's fine. But the problem is his policies on economics, on the border, on crime are not liked by most Americans. He has a very dismal popularity rating. It's actually going down. And not only that, his economic numbers are in the 75% range of dissatisfaction. And of course, with his age, again, 3/4 of Americans think he's too old to run. So they're in a dilemma, and I don't know how they're going to get out of it, Al. It's very problematic for them if they stick with him. If they push him out and Kamala Harris goes up, or a guy like Gavin Newsom comes in and steps in at the last minute, it's a very difficult situation for the Democrats to actually show strength and to not show their hand that they've been manipulating the system from the beginning.
Well, I would have to kind of agree with that one. The only thing I can say that I feel very, very strongly about is I have been studying President Biden for a long time. I watch his body language every time he's on television. I watch his speech delivery every time it's shown. And I have to say, I just think, honestly, that he is too frail a human being to garner the respect of a couple of country leaders that have to respect the United States. Xi Jinping, certainly, and Vladimir Putin. Go ahead.
Yeah, Al, Joe Biden's not making any decisions. He's got staffers that are preparing documentation for him to sign and to speak. He has no idea. He's not managing policy right now. Yeah. It's influencers. It's people like Tom Donilon, who's the senior analytical chief for BlackRock, former national security advisor for Barack Obama.
Right.
It's people like, it was Susan Rice and Ron Klain. Now it's this new guy. I can't remember his name. These people behind the scenes, they're actually driving the direction of it. of the policy in the U.S. It's not elected, you know, it's not an elected Joe Biden. Joe Biden is not actually running the country. People are running Joe Biden. That's apparent. Now, how much the American people realize that, they agree with you. The vast majority say he's not able to run anymore. You know, well over 60, 65 to 70% believe that exactly as you do. The problem comes down to how much money and how many people are manipulating the system behind the scenes,
right,
that keep that information from the population, but actually control the vote and the outcomes in these key districts and key cities. And unfortunately, Republicans that want to protect the system as it is are just as liable and just as much a part of this as anybody else. And
you know, that's interesting you should say that, Jimmy. I have never heard that particular opinion about the Republican Party, that they are as much to blame for where we are right now as the president of the United States. I simply haven't heard that before.
The Republicans are the old school Rhino Republicans, the Mitt Romneys, the Mitch McConnells, the Paul Ryans, the people that liked that the way the system worked before.
Yeah.
They're the ones that created the conditions and undermined the globalists, the financial institutions that actually supported Republican candidates. They're the these Republican candidates, the ones I'm talking about, not all of them. I'm talking about the old school mentality that really hate the Donald Trump ideas. They hate him because they are afraid of him. That will take away the financial interests, and the financial interests drive what's happening in America right now.
Yeah.
And that's that. Those Republicans right there are the ones that cost Donald Trump the election in 2020. They're the ones that actually sided with the Democrats because they wanted to see, quote, a more stable system. But they also wanted to support somebody who would be viable, that they could control. And that was what they thought was Joe Biden. But the unfortunate reality is you give an inch, you're actually giving up a mile with this type of corruption.
Right. Well, I got to tell you, how much time we got here? We're up to about 9 minutes, but I've got to tell you, I think that this personally, if you look at the Biden presidency realistically, and if you look at it unemotionally, I think it's kind of a sad way for a 50-year politician who has done some good things and who is viewed by a lot of people as being a real gentleman. Now we've got the Hunter Biden, you know, baggage, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a real shame that that's the way he's going out. Jimmy, we got 30 seconds. Wrap it up, bud.
Yeah, Joe Biden appeared on the surface because he was a good politician to be that kind of nice old guy. But the reality is underneath it, there's a lot of anger, a lot of bitterness, and a lot of control. We're seeing that with the corruption. You saw it with the incident like Tara Reid and the accusations of rape. You see it behind the scenes with the pedophilia, the grabbing people's hands, you know, those types of issues. The people he supports, to me, does not show someone that's looking out for the best interests of Americans.
I would agree. Gotta go, Jimmy. Ladies and gentlemen, I think this has been one of the best shows in a long time. Please join us next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.